You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavor swirling together with cold brew, topped with a velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles, and that imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Hey, what's up, everyone, and welcome back to the Clone Zone. Today, it's just going to be me and Molly talking about episode 8.
Just us.
And obviously we're 2 hours early. We're going to a show later tonight, so we had to stream earlier. We were going to have Sky Talkers on, but they couldn't do earlier, so we're going to have them on next week to talk about episode 9. But today we're just going to chit chat with all of you about episode 8, Bad Territory. So to kick us off, Molly, even though I know how you feel about this episode, how did you feel about this episode?
I liked it. It felt like kind of a bridge episode. I really liked all of the Crosshair and Omega stuff. I say all of it. There was barely any of them, but I liked their little meditation moment. And I also can appreciate Fennec Shand in this episode for being unapologetically her in every way and be like, y'all got to work for this information. I need help with this praying mantis guy.
I was laughing. I said it in my review and when we were recording our commentary, but it's like the second a Mandalorian character pops up, it's like, I guess this is an episode of The Mandalorian where you need something, I'm gonna ask something of you, we'll go on a little adventure together, and things will be slightly moved forward in the main arc. I thought this episode was okay. I really enjoyed all of the Omega Crosshair stuff as well. It was just nice. Like, their meditation scene is just, there's no other way to say it. It's just really nice. And yeah. I liked it a lot. But it did feel like everything that happened was just kind of forwarding things a little bit, where Crosshair starts to meditate. That probably will help him down the line. Hunter and Wrecker need information, but we don't quite figure out anything else about what is M count or anything like that. So everything at the end of it, I was like, that just felt half done, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, we were all waiting to see who it was that Fennec was going to contact. And we were like, oh, no, next week.
Of course, they hid the hologram. They muffled the voice. Looking forward to seeing why or what people think that was, who they think that was. And MC Lego Boy pointing out Ventress's theme at the end of the episode. I didn't know she had a motif like that. So I did when we watched it a second time around this afternoon, and the music did seem very intentional, but I didn't think to look it up. So that was my guess as well, that it would be Ventress.
I hadn't seen anyone else talk about her theme playing.
Apparently it's from the episode Cloak of Darkness. So it's probably, I don't know if it's Asajj Ventress's theme, but it's probably some music that the Kyners were like, this would be a fun little hint for sharp-eared listeners like MC Lego Boy.
Yeah.
Which I never would have, if it's just from one episode, I never ever would have been able to dig through it and find it. But yeah, that makes sense. They've done stuff like that before. I also think that if you're going to hide the hologram, if you're going to muffle the voice, that probably means it's someone that we know. And it just seemed like Ventress was the best guess.
Yeah, I like the idea that Fennec would know her through her bounty hunting days, maybe. And that it just makes sense to me. You did mention the possibility of it being Cad Bane, but like you said, they didn't leave on the best of terms, Cad Bane and Fennec. So I like the idea of this being the way that we bring in Ventress, because she can just show up now and be like, I've been hunting you.
Yeah. Finnick is like, I'll give you enough information. You'll be able to track them down. Mm-hmm. It does, for some reason, Finnick and Asajj as friends and allies, it makes some sense. And it just very easily gets us to a point where Asajj comes into the story and we'll be like, yeah, she was hunting for them. And it won't be just completely out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. I want to bring in this up real quick, because we were just talking about this from Mike. Such a small thing, but we love that Omega actually has outfits, plural. It's a sign of having a normal life that she isn't stuck in a single uniform / set of armor like her dads are.
I totally agree. We were talking about that, how she has her, like, what is that, a sweater vest?
Yeah, some kind of vest.
We saw that earlier this season, but then she also has that brown jacket. And yeah, it's just something I've started to notice in animation, because it's expensive to create a whole new outfit for a character. So I'm like, oh, it is nice to see Omega in multiple outfits. Yeah, a good way of pointing out that they have a life there and it's not just the same set of clothes like Finnick Shand.
Especially after being at Tantus for however long she was there, you know, wearing the same thing every day there, I'd be excited about wearing cute outfits too.
I wonder if that actually was something they did on purpose for this episode, because we see Finnick, and it is a bit of a joke that she wears the same thing for 40 years straight. But she is like this checkpoint in her life where she is all about the money. She doesn't want to be on a team. And of course, we find out later in the Book of Boba Fett and The Mandalorian that she comes around to that idea. She wants to team up with Boba Fett. But here it's like this interesting dichotomy of Finnick Shand in the same outfit she's always in, and Omega's over here changing clothes just to show that her life and her community is a little more vibrant.
Mm. Also, I just love seeing Crosshair sit cross-legged and try to meditate in full armor. I'm like, why is he in his full armor right now? Does he not have a cute outfit too?
Yeah, where's his tiny little sweater vest? You know what? Speaking of outfits, I'll go ahead and I'll bring up my drawing. We'll get to that, because I just figured you were going to draw what you drew. And I was like, I'll draw something different. So I drew a pit droid bartender with a bottle. And you'll note that it's a bottle of Cerveza Crystal. I thought that was just a fun little touch. But I don't know why I loved that little bartender pit droid so much, but I did.
He was cute. I feel like as Star Wars fans, we really hone in and recognize that the sound that they make. So hearing that sound and seeing him like up on the bar with his little hat pouring drinks was adorable.
There were a lot of pit droids in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because they were on that death planet, too.
Yeah, I love the bartender droid, how he just had kind of a raised platform behind the bar that he would walk on.
Yeah.
But what did you draw? Because we started talking about the scene already. So
yeah, so I had to try to draw the meditation scene, because visually it was stunning, but also it just means a lot for those two characters. So I barely squeezed Batcher in there, just snoozing away, but I thought this was really poignant and lovely to see Crosshair and Omega having this little moment. And it was, we talked about Hunter being the one to tell Omega, like, hey, why don't you try to get Crosshair to have his hand looked at, get AZ to look at it. And I was like, Hunter, why don't you ask him? Why don't you talk to him? But then I was like, oh, no, he knows that he'll listen to Omega. He probably isn't in the right state of mind to listen to Hunter yet.
I also loved the meditation scene. I like that it was helping Crosshair, but also Omega. Because we see in her first scene of the episode, she's tapping her foot. She's anxious. She doesn't want to be sitting around doing nothing. she wants to be active, but there's nothing she really can do right now. So slowing down, just taking a breath was the right move for her as well.
Yeah.
And I like that the other story with Hunter and Wrecker, it had a bit of a parallel there with the mines. They're these explosive objects that are just underwater, under what looks like a calm surface, but they have to go in and be very slow and deliberate with how they disable them. And it reminds me of Crosshair and Omega and their own feelings right now that are simmering just beneath the surface.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some nice like symmetry there with all of that. There was something else that I thought of that this part reminded me of. Oh, was it the, wait, this is the episode that has Fee in it, right? At the very beginning. I also got to point out how funny it was every time Crosshair was like, who?
Yeah.
And he's realizing a lot in this episode how much he's missed. He says that twice at the start of the episode, like, who are these people? Who are you talking about? And then when they sit down to meditate, Crosshair is like, where did you learn this? And she's like, oh, you know, my friend Gunji at one of the Wookiees on Kashyyyk. And he's like, you've been to Kashyyyk? So he is like going through all these motions, realizing how much he has missed and how different the world around him is now.
It again reminded me of Avatar The Last Airbender, because they had that joke play out with Toph or Zuko sometimes, because they weren't part of the Aang gang in season one. So if they ever referenced someone in season one, Toph would be like, I have no idea who you're talking about. but I also think that this is not just a joke. It was funny, but I think Crosshair is realizing and feeling how much he's missed. And I think he probably feels guilty about that. It might even be part of what's wrong with his hand. I don't know. Like, if it's all in his head, then maybe it's partially guilt that's holding him back.
Yeah, could be. Guilt that he thinks he waited too long and he missed his chance to be a part of this, which is stupid because like Omega is, every chance she gets, she's like, you can be more than a sharpshooter. You can be yourself. You can be a part of this team, a part of this family.
Yeah.
She's got to shake him.
Well, let's get into some questions here. I started this one. I liked from Tom N. Do we think Grogu was one of the M count targets during this era?
Could be.
Probably. Honestly, I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, I bet he was.
it breaks my heart to think about how much he kind of had to, I guess, bounce around in all the years between escaping Order 66 and when Din finds him. Like, where was he all that time? Was he okay? Was anyone feeding him?
Keller and Beck. Keller and Beck has taken great care of him right now.
He probably had an M count target too.
Yeah, probably. Okay, we haven't addressed this in a while, but back in season one, it was kind of a big thing of like, do we think Grogu could be in the Bad Batch? And I remember in season one being like, no. But then at the end, when we got to Tantus and everything, I was like, you know what? I'm kind of turning around on the idea that Grogu might be in season two. Now we're getting to the end and we're talking about these M count targets. So do you think there's a possibility of Keller and Beck or Grogu making an appearance in these final episodes?
It would be cute and I would love it, of course, but I don't think there's time for it. Like, the only way I think that could happen is if someone has one of those like pucks or something, or like someone's got a database pulled up and they're just like swiping through possible M count targets and he's one of them. How can you not stop and like zoom in and be like, who is that little man?
I really like that idea so my thought is that when Asajj shows up, she might be taking the Empire's bounties just so she can help protect these force sensitive people.
Oh, I love that idea.
If she pulled out a puck and she was like, I saved him and I saved him and her, and then as she's scrolling through, it's like Keller and Beck and Grogu, but you're right, they'd be like, forget about Tantus. We got to help that little child.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone drops what they're doing and goes to help Grogu.
Yeah, as they should.
Mark White, thanks for this super chat and question. Was anyone else waiting for a rock to move or float during the meditation scene?
No, because I think, did I say this? Yeah, I did say this because I edited our reaction this morning. I was, right after that scene happened, I was like, oh, meditation isn't just for Jedi. Like, I just like that she learned how to meditate from the Wookiees and from specifically a Wookiee Jedi. But look how it's helping her and Crosshair, and it can help anyone heal.
I agree. I did not expect anyone to be all of a sudden revealed as force sensitive, although Omega, like, it's still floating out there, whatever her blood and M counts have to do with one another. But no, I just thought it was something Gunji taught her to do, and it was just a nice, beautiful scene. But maybe Batcher can move rocks with her mind. We haven't even thought about her.
Oh, yeah.
What was she doing on Tantus? She was in prison, too.
There's a reason why she didn't want that food. She was like, nope.
Guiguio, thank you for this question in the super chat. At this point in her story, do you think Fennec was true to her word or contacted someone that is going to be a problem? My first reaction was Cad Bane.
She was true to her word because I think she asked twice about the kid, aka Omega. I think part of her deep down is curious and kind of cares.
She seemed to have a connection with Omega in the first season. She was kind of like imparting wisdom on her and trying to teach her how to survive. So I do think she cares about Omega. And even though I didn't catch the musical connection, my first thought was Asajj.
Mm-hmm. Says Fennec is all about the money and reputation right now, but I think she might deep down still respect the loyalty that the Batch have shown to Omega. I agree.
Yeah. And like we talked about, Fennec and Cad Bane, they're not on good terms. The last time they saw one another, they came to blows and they fought. So yeah, it's possible that off screen they repaired their relationship and are helping each other now, but Fennec doesn't seem like she is on the hunt for Jedi. She specifically said she didn't take M count targets. Cad Bane, I feel like he would. And Asajj, you know, we don't know what her state of mind is right now, but I think that she is more likely helping people because in Dark Disciples she came back to the light side. So I absolutely don't think she is running around hunting Jedi for the Empire.
What if she's not taking M count jobs on purpose because she knows what Ventress is up to?
Yeah. I think that makes sense.
I like that idea.
That they're somewhat in, if they're friendly, they're somewhat in league together.
Yeah, I think they would have mutual respect for each other. And if she knows Ventress is trying to snag as many of the M count bounties as possible in order to protect them, that would just add another interesting layer to Fennec Shan's mind right now.
I'm trying not to get too far ahead of myself, but I really like the idea that Asajj and Quinlan could be inadvertently creating the path here. Mm-hmm. Where they're just trying to help who they can. And yeah, Fennec is probably not part of the path, but is friendly with Asajj and willing to help her out.
Yeah.
But here's another idea for that last hologram. Could it have been Boba Fett?
He's another possibility that we keep bringing up. I would love to see him in the show, and he has a connection to Ventress. So another potential person that could be in the middle of all this that is leading to Ventress.
Connection to Ventress, a connection to Omega, a connection to Fennec. Although I do think that in the Book of Boba Fett, the vibe I get is that the two of them have never met. I can't remember if there are any specific lines or not, but I do kind of think that by that time, that was their first meeting. But if it wasn't super specific, then they could probably skirt around that and be like, yeah, they knew each other back in the early days of the Empire.
Yeah. Jane, we just talked about this. So yes, we think that's very possible. Jane said, do y'all think it's possible that Ventress is taking Imcount bounties, but not giving them over to the Empire, instead turning them over to the Path? I hope that that's what's going on, because I love that little side plot.
The way that this series has connected into the Star Wars Jedi games, a little bit into, and Obi-Wan Kenobi has connected to the Jedi games, I do feel like there is an interweaving plot line there, and it very well could be the Path. I don't know that, you know, it's called the Path yet. I feel like
probably
they could just have a little hiding place for Jedi, and then the network grows over time.
Yeah.
And I do think this is a good point, Ginger Jedi, that, you know, Daniel Logan has already voiced a character this season. So they did get him back into the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been and just for a reg, but
he'd be so down to bring Boba into this, I feel like.
I'm sure he would. That do we think we'll get a Boba appearance? I think it's possible. I don't think that's who Finnick was contacting, but I do think it's still possible that Boba could be involved in this story.
Scrub back like 5 minutes and listen to, we were just talking about Boba Fett showing up.
Ice, thank you for the super chat. Really liked this episode. I like that they're taking the time to set up Ventress and possibly gain Finnick as an ally. It felt like a necessary step. She might think it's a little misguided, but I like the idea that the batch might start to open her up to the idea of loyalty and connection, but no one shows that kind of loyalty to her until she meets Boba. And that's when she fully embraces the idea of connection and a tribe, as we see in Book of Boba Fett. I like what that could mean for Finnick's arc in Star Wars. I agree. I really liked that we got a bit of a, just like, let's check in with Finnick and see what she thinks and where she's at. And yeah, she's more just like, I'm all about money. I don't want to be a part of a team. She kind of makes fun of Hunter and Wrecker for being a team, even though the whole time she wouldn't have caught her, the slayer of Ordo Eris, without them.
I love her because she's a hard ass and she does work hard, but she's also just still in that mindset of like, yeah, I'm in this for myself. Where is the money at? I'm going to follow the money. She eventually does, like he said, learn that a team can work and sometimes you need help. And so I don't know how much more of Fennec's story we're going to get post Book of Boba Fett, but she's really interesting.
I'll be surprised if she never turns up again in The Mandalorian or anything. I wonder if she'll stick around for this show. It would probably be a little bit too much if she were all of a sudden like super helpful. You know, these series tend to let's bring a bunch of familiar faces back for the finale, like Star Wars Rebels brought back Hondo and Wolf and Gregor and Mark Matton and so many faces from all four seasons so they could fight the Empire. I don't think Fennec Shand is going to join the fight against Mount Tantus, but I don't think we've seen the last of her in all of Star Wars.
I like this comment from John Smith. I wonder if we'll get a rebel style epilogue on the last episode. I've been thinking that there's a chance for this because it is the final season to wrap up the entire series. Personally, I would love to see a little epilogue and just, you know, in hopes that most everyone is okay and living peacefully in a few years, you know, I want to see that.
I think there's a possibility for it. See, we could see kind of how Rex and Gregor and Wolf maybe banded together. I think we joked a week or two ago about having an epilogue where every single named clone gets a scene, but it's interesting with Omega, especially. I don't know how much they would dive into her story post this series because, you know, they might have more plans for her. But then again, they had plans for the characters of Star Wars Rebels, and they still did an epilogue there. So who's to say?
She's still so young, you know. Mm-hmm. We can show a little glimpse of what a happy life for her looks like that isn't a huge time jump, and then they still have room to show what she's up to when she gets a little older.
Yeah. I assume that this show is probably going to have a bittersweet ending, but will lean towards hopeful, or the hopeful at least. Mm-hmm. And even though the reign of the Empire is just beginning, I think that they're going to want to end everything on a satisfying, happier note.
Yeah. And I think they'll just continue. Hopefully they give us a glimpse of what it looks like to continue helping the younger Regs, you know, acclimate to a normal life, and helping any other clones that don't want to fight anymore, don't want to be soldiers anymore, helping them meditate and travel and, you know, try to live as peaceful as possible.
Set up like a clone commune somewhere.
Yeah.
We just sit around and meditate all day.
She's going to be like their life coach.
I mean, she's a good one. She's coaching Crosshair pretty well.
She's learning from the best of the best. She reminds me of Ahsoka in that way. Like, we got to see Ahsoka grow up and learn the best lessons from the best Jedi. Omega is learning a lot of the best lessons from the best characters that are around in this era.
I like that. Going back to Asajj a bit, I say to this question, what if Asajj is one of the M-Count targets, which does make sense?
What if they just think she's dead, though?
Maybe, but then I think Fennec said that she knows someone who has been taking the M-Count bounties. So if that's Asajj, that would be kind of strange. I guess she could be using a... Oh. I bet she's using an alias, and the alias is the Harbinger.
Yeah.
Instead of running around saying, my name is Asajj Ventress, and yes, I will take your bounty.
Sure. Probably not a good idea.
Yeah, she could just be like, hello, I'm the Harbinger.
People are like, ooh, sick nickname.
Uh-huh.
She's like, thanks. It is cool.
But yeah, you're right. As far as the Empire thinks, she's dead. Dooku killed her.
Mm-hmm.
So he would have told Palpatine that. And if she pops back up, has a new nickname. Okay, I like that idea.
I'm into it.
And yes, I should point out the title of the next episode is The Harbinger.
Mm-hmm. I'm so excited for that. Better be her. I'm ready. I'm ready for it.
Ann Porkins, thanks for the question. I wonder if there's any overlap with M-Count experiments and the Inquisitors. Probably won't see it in the show, but I imagine they at least got samples from all the Inquisitors at some point. I don't know, like, where the Inquisitors are at right now. You know, some of them were, like, ready to go as soon as Order 66 happened. But I don't know how quickly they got out into the galaxy.
Yeah. I guess I could see that. Like, having bounty hunters pick up the M-Count bounties and then taking them to the Inquisitorius and then, like, converting them.
Yeah.
Brainwashing them, kind of. I could see that.
And that they could be, what, using... doing experiments...
to Tantus first. Maybe there's, like, a whole section of Mount Tantus where they're scrubbing Jedi brains and trying to turn them into Inquisitors, and then they send them off to Inquisitorius.
Maybe, because Iskat in the Inquisitor Rise of the Red Blade book, she kind of gets sent around a couple of places. One of them, I feel like it's suggested that it's Nur and Fortress Inquisitorius. But then she goes to Coruscant and she hears torture happening at Coruscant. So if they wanted to experiment on some Jedi and send them to Tantus, I could see that.
Yeah.
Like, we know it's not just Project Necromancer there. We know there's more than just clones there. We know there's a Zillow Beast. So there's all kinds of experiments happening there. could be a whole wing of Inquisitor stuff.
I hope Grogu's not there.
I don't think he is. I don't think we're going to get a Grogu appearance. It would be funny if they were just saving a bunch of clones and they're like, who's this precious baby? Get him.
He wouldn't. I don't think he would be there because they sounds like they never really had much time with him. The Empire, I mean.
Yeah.
It sounds like he's being passed around.
We still don't know how Grogu wound up on that desert planet with just a bunch of pirates. So there's still a lot of questions there. But the fact that they set up Keller and Beck and Grogu together, I don't think they're going to show us the next step in that journey in the Bad Batch. It'll probably be in The Mandalorian and Grogu or Mando Season 4 or whatever.
Yeah. I want to bring up this super chat from Saf the Staff. Love the detail that they brought back those droids that captured Gungi in the background.
I thought that was interesting.
Which droids?
So on the space station, right when Hunter and Wrecker come into the bar, there's two droids on either side of them. And they're the same model as like the droid syndicate that has Gungi in season 2.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So then I was like, wait, is this the same space station? It's not. But I did think that was interesting that maybe these droids are connected to that syndicate or something.
Yeah, I didn't catch that. That's cool.
But yeah, I liked that bar. I liked the music a lot.
Me too. Like I feel like I would hang out there. It seemed a little dive bar, but we talk about it a lot at Force Center. I love a dive bar.
It had a VIP lounge. That's where
Finnick was sitting. I saw that.
So it's not that bad. Music was good. Service was great. The bartender's ready to put the smack down on anyone that draws a blaster. It's a good time.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And Clink's they got little in the background. Yeah. He was so cute.
Every time you see one of those guys waddling around, I just love it so much. Ice, thank you for the next question. Super chat. Also, more Ming-Na Wen in Star Wars, always a good thing. I'll happily accept any time she comes up. I think we could have one more Finnick episode. And doesn't she say she's wanted by the Security Bureau in Mando Season 2? Maybe it's because she took part in a raid on a top-secret Imperial cloning facility. I don't think her character is there yet to fully invest in that kind of suicide mission. But maybe they find out that she's helping Asajj, feeding her information or something like that. Or maybe it's because she killed, like she is an assassin, so she might kill someone in the ISB at some point.
Yeah, she's not really on she's just a bounty hunter. She's not on the Empire's side, so they might see her as a threat.
Yeah, I mean, right now I think she'll take jobs from good guys, bad guys. The Empire is probably fine with that, but at some point, she'll probably do something to get on their bad side.
Yeah. And Finnick Fan, thanks for the next super chat. Loved the episode. Love to get more Finnick. I knew it was going to be a side adventure episode, which helped manage expectations. The real question now, though, is do people just get shot in every bar? I think in Star Wars, that's always a chance.
I don't think anyone got shot at the sanctuary in Book of Boba Fett, but it got just blown up. So
yeah, I mean, the bars that they show us, with the exception of like Canto Bight, and even that got pretty messed up. You know, the bars,
horses.
The bars that they show us in Star Wars, they're there for the scum and the villainy. You know, they're there for trouble to hang out at, and where there's trouble, so there's someone getting shot.
It is funny that that's just what happens in Star Wars. Every single cantina, something bad's going to happen. And everyone's like, yeah, okay, same thing as usual.
It's just like the price you pay for hanging out in a place like that. And it's kind of like, ooh, I don't know if it's worth going there, but I need information from that crowd. So it's always going to be something similar to that.
Yeah. I saved a question from our good friend and thumbnail creator, Brian Ward. Did the Empire ever test Boba's blood? Because they had to know who or what he was. I doubt it. So early on, I think in season one, we thought that maybe they were after Omega because she was a non-altered clone of Jango Fett, except for being female. But really, it was just because they wanted to manipulate Nala Se. So I don't think they had any reason to search for Boba Fett until maybe right now. I guess if they wanted to test every single clone's blood, they could have tried to seek him out, but he's a bounty hunter and probably doesn't. He's not going to give up his blood if they just ask nicely.
Is there a chance they don't even know about him?
I assume they would. I mean, Nala Se would. All the Kaminoans knew.
Yeah, but they're all gone now.
Yeah, but they were talking about everything back in season one before they were all wiped out. So I think the Empire probably knows, or at least someone is like, oh yeah, Boba Fett is a clone of Jango, but they probably just didn't think it was a priority. Mm-hmm. But maybe they do now once they tested Omega's blood.
Maybe. Yeah. This is all very new information still.
So that all they have to do really is say, hey, Boba Fett, we got a really big bounty if you want to come check it out. And then they can capture him and like stick him on the hand and be like, got your blood and send him on his way.
How old is he at this point? Do we know?
Same age as Omega.
They're probably like, not worth it. He's a little shit.
I think he's probably like,
sorry,
13. It is 4:30, Molly. Get it together.
It's true, though. He's a little...
He's a little turd.
Turd.
Yeah, I feel like Palpatine would know about Boba.
That's true, yeah.
He helped, you know, set up the deal with the Kaminoans, so...
Mm. But maybe they can't find him or something.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to be found unless he wants to take a bounty.
Omega doesn't want to be found either, but here we are.
But they're gonna. Well, I feel like we've already covered everything in this episode. And I mean, I'm sorry, we are moving a little faster today because we have a show to get to tonight. And so we have to do everything earlier, but is there anything else you want to...
Well, we can talk about the... Did they name that planet? I keep calling it the Death Planet because Fennec is like, helmets on, boys. The air here will kill you. And I'm like, oh, geez. All right.
People have been calling it like the Everglades. I called it Space New Orleans, but I've never been to the Everglades. So I'm just more familiar with like those fan boats and stuff from New Orleans.
I liked the idea of that's how you kind of get around on this planet. And the space gators were great.
Those were fun. I liked Wrecker just straight up wrestling them.
Meth gators. Meth gators. Oh, no.
We already have Space Florida. That's Niamos. So I was saying this was Space Louisiana instead, but... Whichever, it doesn't matter.
It does give me more kind of, on a second watch today, it gave me more jungle vibes. So yeah. I like the Everglades. But seeing Wrecker pick one of those gators up and like wrestle it, it was really funny. He could have like a little side job doing that.
That'll be when they do the epilogue and they show what each clone did after the after they settled down. Wrecker's just a meth gator wrestler.
Oh, no. Hopefully he doesn't need to do stuff like that for work. But if he wants to, he can.
And yeah, we'll probably find out tomorrow because I'm really happy with how quickly they're putting out the episode guides on StarWars.com.
Yeah.
And they'll usually tell you what planet that was, tell you the names of creatures and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, this episode was pretty straightforward. It left us with a pretty big cliffhanger that we can't really speculate much more about and talk about until next week's episode.
I'll be really surprised if it's not Asajj, but who knows?
Yeah. Hopefully it will be.
Oh, and hey, Phil, just saying, popping in at the last minute to say hey, basking in the fun and thoughtful Clone Zone speculation while working on the Star Wars.
Yeah.
Well, I hope we're not that distracting.
I'm sure we're not. Phil's just like laughing about how wrong we are.
How wrong we're, yeah, about everything. But yeah, the question is, will it happen next week or not? And oh, I'll point out that yes, MC Lego Boy, this was the last episode that we got as
no idea what's happening now.
So everything now is pure speculation. No clue what's happening in episode 9. So don't worry about that.
So it's 9 and then we're getting a 2-episode 10, 11?
9, 10, 11 are together, and then 12, 13, 14, 15 are all one a week.
Cool. Oh, we're getting to the good stuff. I don't want this show to end. I like it so much. I think part of the reason I was bummed out yesterday with all the Acolyte discourse, because just a lot of people were talking about the Acolyte, and it ended up being a lot more kind of half and half. People were into it, not into it. And I was shocked, but I think that was because I'm so used to talking Bad Batch stuff with everybody. And like most people talking about Bad Batch is loving it. So yeah. I'm just like, I've really been enjoying all the positivity with Bad Batch fans, and I don't want that to end.
I think Guio is right. I'm hoping that it's a nice long episode for the finale. I think it probably will be. For some reason, I think they said at some point it was going to be a 16 episode season. So maybe 15 is just like, it's not a two-parter. We just combined it and it's a nice long one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it'd be a good bookend, just like the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have anything else that you want to talk about, we can wrap up and go get ready.
Let's do it.
Okay. Well, sorry it was a shorter stream this time, and it was 2 hours early, but we wanted to make sure that we still got discussion of Bad Territory in. So thanks, everyone, for hanging out and talking about the episode with us. We'll be back tomorrow, probably to finish the Lego Venator. We only have a few bags left, so we'll take care of that tomorrow, and then next week we'll be back for the Clone Zone with Sky Talkers podcast.
Yeah, hopefully there will be no mishaps like last time you were building the Venator and you thought you had built so much of it wrong or messed something up so badly.
I figured it out.
Yeah, it's almost done, and then we can put it up somewhere and it won't be in the way anymore. We can start a much smaller set.
Yeah, we have like the helmets and stuff that we can build, but we're wrapping up on the Venator finally.
Yeah.
So yeah. We'll see all of you tomorrow if you want to hang out while we build Lego. But thanks again for hanging with us, and may the Force be with you.
Bye.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew topped with a velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. And that imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.